Ladies and gentlemen,
this is Gamertag Radio.
Hi, welcome to Gamertag Radio, episode 1391. This is your host, Danny Peños, and joining me, we have Paris living in the house. What's up, Paris?
Hey, good morning. How you doing?
Good, man. Good. I'm at my new office, by the way. Yo, it took forever to do this, but it's been great. I'm vibing. I'm loving this setup. Actually, I have like a record player, Paris, so late at night, you know, when I just want to take a break, I just go back there, and I got my classics on vinyl. When you come over here, Paris, that's what we're going to do. We're going to have some drinks. Just vibe with the classics. I got, you know, Wu-Tang. I got a Tribe Called Quest.
I was just about to ask, do you have Tribe on vinyl?
Oh, vinyl. Yeah. I have multiple. I have multiple
vinyls. You got Midnight Marauders?
Midnight Marauders is on top somewhere in the back there, you know, but it's in the back there somewhere. But it's dope. Really love the setup. And it's been great, man. It's been great. But... Oh, go ahead. You were going to say something?
No, I was just going to comment on the vinyl stuff. You know, I have a record player. I should start investing in this stuff, man. I have a record player.
You should. You know what it is? You know what it is? It's different, you know, sitting back there and just vibing with my records. Like, I also have records that is hard to find that probably the artist released it at that time, and that's it. And it's not like available on streaming services or anything like that. You know what I'm saying? So like, I have stuff like that, you know? So, but it's good. It's good. It's good. You'll see next time. Now, I know people are asking if this is a new place. No, this is our current thing is the main reason why I had to switch because, you know, our daughter, she's getting older. So we want to have her have her own room there. And that's also going to be Ree's office too there. You know what I'm saying? So Ree is not usually like me, you know, using the office like a lot compared to me. So, cause I'm always doing stuff, meetings and content, and all that stuff. So yeah, that's the main reason why we did it, man. You know, and this one is a smaller room, but I feel like it's good. It's like a good setup. You know, I have so much crap, Paris, that I can't even fit here, man. I was trying to put up all my badges that I have throughout the years, bro. It doesn't fit back there, man.
Yeah.
So I have it like in a box somewhere, you know? So, but I found some classics, badges, man. So now, so here's the thing, guys, you know, this is Gamertag Radio's 20th anniversary. I know we talked about this a couple of times already now, and we have a lot of things planned. I'm working on some future content that's going to be really, really good. Even Paris doesn't even know what it is. I don't want to jinx it yet. So I'll tell Paris later once it's like official. But it's multiple. But Friday, we're going to have a very, very important podcast interview with Phil Spencer. I think that's going to be a great conversation. And we're going to release it sometime that day. I don't want to say the time because it's complicated. Because the thing is, I'm going to be in New York. And I even got a place super last minute to record this interview because I'm not going to be home. And that was the only time to do it. So Paris is going to be there. Originally, we were planning to have Rihanna too to be part of the interview, but it just schedule got really complicated behind the scenes. So, but we're excited. I'm pumped up. I'm pumped up for the interview. This is going to be the third time that Phil is going to be on our show. And I have to mention this because a lot of people don't know this, but I was talking to Ree about, you know, doing interviews and all that stuff. You know, we had a long conversation about, you know, and here's the thing, Paris. Back in the early days of GTR, I'm talking about like 2005 and even before I started a GTR, even like in the early 2000, like 2001 and stuff like that. Here's the thing, Paris. Can you believe we were one of the first podcasts that started having interviews, not only with developers, but execs? That was not a thing back in those days. And I always got to give props to not only Microsoft, but like Sega and some people from Nintendo too. They gave me opportunity for that too. But those are the companies during their early days that got to see the potential with podcasts. And they gave me the opportunity to sit down and just talk. Like, for example, on Friday, I'm going to release an episode for GTR Retro. And this takes place back in 2005 when Xbox 360 launched, right? So before the Xbox 360 launch at that time, I sat down with Jay Adler. He was one of the execs also from Xbox during that time. And he was on our show, and he just came to our show with no PR. Not, he was just like, he wanted to do it because I requested it from a person that used to work over there at Xbox, Trixie. You remember her, Paris, right?
Of course.
Yeah. She told Jay Adler, and Jay Adler goes, yeah, let's do it. And this is before Zero Hour, so, and before the 360 launch too. And we had a great conversation. I have the audio too. Yeah, and it's crazy how the access that we had, and we still have, but I'm talking about like in the beginning of those days, man. Like, it's really, really hard now when you launch a, you know, YouTube channel or podcast to get that type of access. You know, like, I feel like they gave me the opportunity and trusted me to do all these interviews back in those days. I'm very excited that Microsoft gave us the opportunity once again to sit down with Phil this Friday. And I'm very, very excited, man. Very, very excited. So, Paris, you have anything to say about that?
A couple things I want to say. First, I, as you were talking, I was trying to think. I was like, who's the first exec I ever got to sit down and talk to? Mm-hmm. Believe it or not, it was Peter Moore. And it was E3 2007. The speed interviews. Remember those?
Yeah, it's. I think it was like a minute or two. You sit down with whoever was there on the table. Mm-hmm. And then once you're done, you switch to another person. So like, it was Peter Moore, Peter Molyneux. There was people there, perhaps from Games for Windows at that time. I think Frankie from Bungie was there. Mm-hmm. And there was somebody, it was a couple people. And it was a lot of fun. I still have those recordings. I still have it.
Well, it was funny because the other guy from Bungie that was doing that, it was Frankie and it was Brian Gerard. And when I was interviewing Brian Gerard, what was that, last year, we were talking about that. I was like, man, I remember the first time I met you and we were going down memory lane out of 07 thing. But I think the first real interview I did with an exec was that next year at the Xbox Spring Showcase in San Francisco in 08. Shane Kim.
Oh, Shane.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we had him. We recorded an interview with him. It was in, was it E3 2008? It was a Games for, was it a Games for Windows?
Yeah, no, that was Santa Monica. That was 07.
07, my bad. 07.
Remember, I'm in the background mean mugging the whole time.
Yeah, the whole time. I remember that. And here's a fact. This is a fact. Look, you guys can look it up. Gamertag Radio has the most, not only interviews in gaming, but the most sit down with execs than any other gaming podcast, like, period. Because I was like looking, I'm like, yo, the amount of people that we sat down with back in those days, it's a lot. It's like, wow. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm very proud about those things, man. You know what I'm saying? So, and it's cool to see, you know, now other shows doing their own thing. Like what you said about Greg, you know, we're kind of funny sitting down with you and so on. So it's good to see that. And plus you on S-Cast, interviewing Phil at that time too. Was it like last year? It's good to see that, man. You know, like those days, it was not a thing at all. You know, because here's the thing. Before we continue with the show, back in those days, it was more about the execs talking with the media. It was only media like IGN, One Up, what's the other one, Kotaku, and so on. You know what I'm saying? So it's good to see that, man. It's really, really cool to see that, you know. So, plus Phil, Paris.
Well, I wasn't done.
Oh, I thought you were done. Go ahead.
Jesus,
go ahead.
Christmas. There you go. See, this is 20 years. I've been dealing with this 20 years. I think you're about to say what I wanted to say just about the Phil interview. And I'll let you jump in and lead it. But all I simply wanted to say was I've seen comments about the interview, like what we should ask and this and that and the other. And I just want to be crystal clear. I am not going to ask questions that I know he won't answer. So as an example, is the Halo Master Chief Collection coming to PlayStation and the Switch 2? He is not going to answer that. So it is a complete waste of time for me to ask things like that. Phil is going to answer questions to things that he has officially stated or that Xbox or Microsoft has officially stated. He is not going to answer rumors and speculation. So I think people need to set their expectations on that. It would be irresponsible for us as interviewers to ask him things that are a waste of time. He's the CEO of Microsoft Gaming. You need to be respectful of the title and the position that he's in, number one, but ask questions that he can answer, because you have to remember this. They have timelines on things that they're going to reveal. He ain't giving it to us unless he willingly wants to give it on his own, but he's not going to answer when the handheld's coming. He's not going to answer when if the next Xbox is a hybrid. He's not going to answer those questions unless he wants to reveal it. You can ask things in a way that if he wants to elaborate further, he can. But to directly ask him a question like that is 100% waste of time. And I just think people need to be clear on that.
Yeah, I don't know why people are bringing this up. Like, I know, though, I think for the 1,000th episode of GTR, people were requesting, okay, ask Phil how much the Xbox Series X is going to cost. Why Phil's going to answer that question? He's not going to do that during the interview. They're going to have their own time and place to make announcements, not on a small podcast. That's not going to work. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Anything that leaks, it doesn't make sense to have those conversations. Like, I don't know. It's like you said, Paris, I think they're not going to talk about it. And plus, the last thing you want is to make a guest uncomfortable by coming up with, like, you know, clickbait questions. Here's one that came up a couple years back when I had Reggie made the announcement he was going to be on Game of Tiger Radio. Multiple people were asking about the GameSpot stocks. I'm like, why would I ask him that question? At that time, he was a board member, and I'm like, I'm not going to ask that question. That's dumb. Like, you know, he's not going to answer that question at all, man. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, you're right, man. You're right.
One other thing. And again, I want to give you the space because you're the one that set all this up. Props to you for getting this interview, the whole thing. But one other thing is the timing of doing this. You kind of elaborate a little bit that schedules were crazy, but I want to give you the floor on that, because there's conspiracy theories out there that he's going on an apology tour because it's right after the Dev Direct and all that. But that is not the case with this interview. So please, sir.
All right. So usually when I do, I sent out a request for an interview, especially when it's someone like Phil in that position, I got to do it ahead of time because it gets really complicated. Like, their schedule is totally booked. It's very, very busy. We started having this conversation back in like late August, early September. You know, and true story, I was on IGN Xbox Unlocked. You know, Ryan always giving us props. He was like, hey, Danny, so congratulations, your 20th anniversary has come up. And he started mentioning, man, Phil should be on your show. And behind the scenes in my head, I'm like, oh yeah, he is going to come on our show. I just can't say anything, you know, like, because originally we wanted to do it a different date. I'm not going to say the date because it was just, you know, but it was just me traveling.
I think it's important that you do say that because that's what I think people need to understand, that we were going to do this way earlier.
Yeah, we're going to do it. I think
it was last 15th, week. Just
last
saying,
week.
Yeah.
What's it last week? I was thinking, yeah. Was it February? No, it was actually last week. We were going to do it. And it just got too complicated with both of our schedules. I'm like, oh no, man, that would have been perfect. You know? So originally, and Paris, you can say it too, if you want. Originally we wanted to surprise everyone. And we were like, we're just going to shadow drop it and just like not say anything. But we felt like it was important for us to say it because I'm like, hey, you know what? It's right after the Xbox Direct. Like, it makes sense. Like, you know, let's just do it. And we planned it out. Paris and I were like, when should we do it? And I'm like, all right, let me do it on. Let me announce it Monday morning, and we'll mention to everybody. So there's no conspiracies or anything like that. I don't know where that's been coming because I haven't seen that from. You know what I'm saying? But. Yeah, but go ahead.
It's just the internet. It's just social media. People are always going to be skeptics. They never, take things at face value for what they are. But no, it's like, look, at this point, like you already said, man, we've talked to Phil Spencer multiple times over the years. If you want to get any idea of the type of questions we're going to ask or whatever, go back in the archives and go listen to that stuff. Hell, the very first time I ever spoke to Phil Spencer in my life, what did I say, Danny? What was the first thing I said?
Was it about Connect?
Yes.
He's like, I don't like Connect. I'm like, oh my God. That was funny. And Phil was cool about it too. He's like, oh, I understand. That's cool. That's when he took over, he got that position, right? Like head of Xbox at that time.
Yeah. And even, I mean, hell, even the last time I got to talk to him on XCast, and I was bringing up about the feelings with the community and, you know, how they felt about the direction of Xbox. This is right after Redfall, by the way. And this is why I tell you ask a question in a way that if someone wants to elaborate further on things that you aren't sure they're going to be able to talk about, they can do it. And the rest is history with that. Phil talking about it doesn't matter if it's going to be if Starfield was an 11 out of 10. Talked about how they lost the last generation for the digital library, stuff like that. So these are things we didn't even expect him to talk about. But, you know, he was not in the best of moods that day. And he kind of really exposed some of the business side of gaming and just currently where Xbox was at that time. Because you have to remember, at that time, Redfall had come out, disaster. They lost the CMA thing. So there was a real concern. They were not going to get Activision at that time. He was not in a good mood at all.
Hey, man. Hey. And I remember Paris signing me up. Oh, man, this interview is going to be interesting. I was like, oh, yeah. No.
Boy, the DMs I got before that thing came, boy, everybody in the industry wanted to know what that one was going to be about. That was crazy.
Yeah. And yeah, man, like I like to plan things way ahead because, you know, I just want to do this right. And, you know, for those that are coming up with like conspiracy theories, bro, we've been doing this for a long ass time. You guys have no idea how things work, man. No idea. It's hard, man. It's hard. You know what I'm saying? So like, put it this way. When I had Reggie on, when was it? Back in 2021, I managed to get Reggie on our show. That was like a 10-year process because he was, you know, president of Nintendo of America, and every time I requested, Nintendo would say no. It took a very, very long time. And I just tweeted about it one time on Twitter, and he said, oh, we should make it happen. And that's an another year process for that to happen. You know what I'm saying? So like, people think that it's just luck or whatever. You know what I'm saying, Paris? Like, or conspiracy, like you were saying. People have no idea, man. Everything takes time. And it's not what you say, it's how you present it to the people that are in charge handling the communication to book these interviews, man. You know what I'm saying? Like, it takes a long, long time, man. So I'm very proud of that, man. Because, look, I've done it. Paris has done it, you know. Pete and Ree behind the scenes for like when Ree was also on What's Good Games. Like it's a process, man. It's not easy. It's not easy at all, man. So just want to say that, man. Anything else, Paris, about this before we go to the?
No, like I said, I'm looking forward to it later this week. Be able to do it, and yeah, it's gonna be good.
It's gonna be good.
It's always good getting a chance to talk to him.
Yeah, exactly. So we're gonna talk about. I mean, this is gonna be good, Paris. It's gonna be good. I know last week everybody was talking about the announcement of the Nintendo Switch. Everybody was talking about that, man. So, two things. We talked about the console, but I think we should talk about we should definitely talk about predictions of games that we might see at launch. And here's the thing. In my opinion, probably people are gonna have different opinions about this. But still to this day, the best console, I mean, the console that had the best launch of games day one. And still to this day, in my opinion, was Sega Dreamcast. There were so many games on that, right? But here's the good things and the bad thing about that. The good things about it is when it came out, so many games, so many options for you to choose and so on, right? The bad thing is, months later, it's dry. There's nothing new because you release so many games on day one. And this is like in 1999, so it's different nowadays, right? But, and I think fast 4 years later, I think the launch of the Nintendo Switch, the original Switch, was pretty good because that year, every month there was an exclusive. So it was something new, exciting from the first party. And still you will get to see like some third party support here and there, right? But I think this time, because of the success of Nintendo Switch, the original, I think that there's going to be a lot more support from third party more than ever. And plus, we're going to get to see a lot of cool games from Nintendo. So we're going to talk about our prediction of like games that we think might come out on day one or during the launch window of the first couple months of Nintendo Switch 2. So Paris, you want to start with your prediction, what we might see in your opinion from either third parties or whatever, first party or anything like that?
Before that, can I rant about the Switch for a second?
Oh, yes, you can.
Okay. So obviously we got the reveal. We did a podcast like right after, but I have noticed over the past few days, I've seen various comments and various articles from reputable media sites that are poo-pooing the Switch reveal. This wasn't impactful enough. This wasn't good enough. It's not innovative.
Man.
And it's so funny. I said it days before. I'm like, look, if the Switch 2 is nothing more than just a more powerful Switch, that's good enough. It's good enough. I don't need them to innovate. I don't need them to reinvent the wheel with whatever this is going to be. Because the current state of the industry sucks. Let's just be crystal clear about that, right? Obviously, what we were talking about before all that, there's a lot of moving parts in the industry right now. People getting laid off, all that. This honestly is not the time to take some huge risk. It just isn't. If you have a formula, like, look, the Nintendo Switch has changed the way we play games, right? With this device. Why would you divert from something that works? It makes a lot of sense that, hey, we're just going to give you a more powerful Switch. We're going to be able to attract more third-party games to come to the platform. Bigger screen, bigger Joy-Cons, lessons learned from the original design. Keep it going. They obviously, and again, you go through the history of Nintendo. We know they're the innovators. We get that. We don't have Rumble or wireless controllers without Nintendo, as an example, right? They've obviously taken risks with things like the 3DS, you know what I mean? Clearly the Wii U, which didn't work. So it's not about that Nintendo can't innovate, but I didn't realize there was a rule they had to innovate every time, I guess is my point. Okay, they didn't do it this time. Fine, maybe they'll do it next time. You know, it's fine. I'm excited for what this device is. What I see on you're showing on the screen right now, being a bigger screen, right? Being more powerful. We'll obviously get the tech specs later when they do the direct in April. I'm fine with what the Switch is right now, but it is crazy to me to see that a 2.5 minute video, people have already downplayed everything about what this device potentially could be. Guess what? We know nothing. You know nothing. Hell, you saw the Joy-Con that was, they're using it like a mouse. Maybe that's the innovation. Maybe there's some unique gameplay feature about that we just don't know. You don't know. We have no idea what the Switch 2 is going to be. But even if at the end of the day, it's still just a Switch, I'm fine with that. That's all. I just feel like I want to say that because I posted it yesterday and I even had some private conversations with some prominent people about it that disagreed with me. And we're going back and forth. And I'm like, why? Why does Nintendo have to do something completely out of the box this time? And no one can give me a straight answer on that.
Yeah, and guess what? Every company is going to copy them. Every single
time. They already are.
Hey,
I was just a CES. Guess what? Everything's a goddamn Switch now. That's the point I'm trying to make.
Here's the thing. And we're keeping it real, man. There was a time that companies didn't want to take a risk to release a handheld because they were like, oh, no, Nintendo mastered that. I think the only company was like, what? PlayStation that released multiple handhelds, right? There was a couple that only released once and it was a failure and then never invested in that ever again. You know, so give Nintendo props, man. Let me tell you, the reason why there's a Steam Deck was because Nintendo. All these, the ROG Ally and all these other handhelds out there is because of Nintendo, man. You know, not now it's like a normal thing, right? And here's the thing too, Paris. before we go to the games, the reason why, I apologize for my cough, but the reason why it was different, the presentation, when we got to see Nintendo Switch, the original Nintendo Switch at that time, it was because it was something new. So they had, like, you know, people playground, playing the Switch during a flight. Like, they, remember those clips that they were showing when they first revealed the Nintendo Switch? It was because it was something new. We have never seen anything like that before. But now, like you said, it's kind of like the original with new features that there are things we still don't know. And it is more powerful than the last console. And so, and the bigger screen, bigger Joy-Cons, all that stuff. And I think this is enough to hype people up. And then later, we're going to get to see and learn about the features and the games that's going to be available there, man. You know, like, look, there's a microphone. Supposedly, there's a microphone on top of this. You talked about the mouse. I mean, imagine the return of Mario Paint, Paris, using a Joy-Con as a mouse, the things that you could, people could draw on that, right? Mm-hmm. Or let's say a new Mario Maker, Mario Maker 3, where people could use that as a mouse to design new levels. Yo, it's going to mind blow a lot of people, and it's going to sell a lot of copies, man.
Can I pause you really quick on the Mario Maker thing? Because yeah. Before I forget.
Yeah, sure.
What if it's a Mario Kart Maker? You can make your own track.
Sick. Or... that would be insane. Or Paris, a 3D version of Mario Maker. Yo.
Yo, sign me up if that ever happens. Yo, that'd be like insane.
Like a Mario Galaxy or Mario Odyssey, and people design their own levels, bro. Mind blowing. That'll be huge. All right, let's go with the predictions, Paris. And I know this, some of them are rumors, but I'm going to mention these games that I feel I could see that happening. I think the other day I read something about, and I think it was, I wasn't on Twitter or X, I can't remember, but people were saying that it looks like Xbox is going to have multiple games. It looks like that is the company that's probably going to release the most games on day one. Don't know if that's true or not. We'll see. But it does make sense if it happens. So I'm going to mention some of these games, Paris, and you tell me yes or no. All right. Halo Master Chief Collection, day one. Yes or no?
Okay. When we say day one, are we saying the day the system comes out or a quote unquote launch window? No.
I'll go with day one. I mean, it could be launch window, but I can see a day one possibility with this. Yo, I'm take a badge.
I'm going to say yes.
With online features and everything. Everything yeah, that's
I'm going to say yes.
Microsoft Flight Simulator 2024. A launch window? Or never?
Potentially launch. Okay. I think it comes to the device. I just don't think day one.
That will be sick if it comes out. That I think that's the perfect game to get a whole new audience and play it on the go. Besides playing it on xCloud and all that stuff, you know what I'm saying?
And people are asking, what is a launch window for me? And again, we don't know when it's coming out, but let's just say for pretend it comes out in July. I would say July until the end of the year.
Yeah, that's the launch window, the launch next window. Couple months. Sea of Thieves.
Yes.
Day one?
Yes.
I can see that. I think that will be a pretty good crowd for that game to come out. Hi-Fi Rush.
Yes.
Okay. Gears of War 1 Ultimate Edition.
No.
Launch window, though. It's not coming out at all?
I don't know. I think it'll come out. I just don't think it'll come out this year.
Okay. That makes sense. I mean, these two already came out, so I can see it. People could re-download or buy it from the eShop. Grounded and Pentiment. It's already out on Nintendo Switch, so... both Ori games already came out. Hellblade 2.
Yes.
I can definitely see that. The first one, you could play it, but it's only through the cloud you could play it, the original game. Age of Mythology.
Yes.
Okay. Well, your turn. You have any other predictions?
Well, you just focus all on Xbox.
Yeah, so. Yeah, but I mentioned the Xbox releasing the most. That's why.
No, my thing is, I think... I think Metroid Prime 4 is day one.
Yeah, I could definitely see that.
And it's cross-gen. I don't think that's... I think anything they had already announced coming in 2025 is cross-gen. I don't think it's exclusive to Switch 2. I think anything, obviously, that they show coming up here in April might be exclusive to Switch 2. I am going to, and this is me hopium, 3D Mario launch window holiday.
Okay. I can see
exclusive,
that.
Exclusive to Switch 2. I think we will, and kind of blanking on what the actual games would be, but I just think from a third party's perspective, I think EA, let me go with this, 2K, you'll see whatever the new NBA 2K6 or whatever it is, that'll be there. New WWE game will be there day one. I think Ubisoft, you will get some, maybe not Shadows, but you'll probably, sounds like you're going to get Assassin's Creed Mirage. I mean, I think you'll see some other select Ubisoft titles there as well. I think EA, you'll see some select EA titles there. I don't think whatever this new Battlefield is, I don't think that's in the launch window. Could be. Very well could be. Mm-hmm. I do think, and work with me now on this, Black Ops 6 is day one.
I could see that. 100%.
And whatever the next Call of Duty is will be day one. We'll launch day one on it in the holiday as well. It'll be interesting to see if we get back catalog Call of Duty games on Switch 2, which why not? But I think that just comes down to time, studios, resources, if they're able to get all that stuff ported over, you know, but ready for this. Here's one that we've not talked about. Fallout 76.
Not a launch day game.
Day F and one. Why not?
I can see it as a launch window.
Why? Why? See, I'm going to be grumpy. Why?
I don't know. I feel like I could see that game maybe later the year or the year after that.
But why? And that's what, and I'm not trying to be a-hole. Seriously. Like, and the reason I'm saying I'm keep pushing that, why wouldn't you put it out immediately, for the fact that this is an older game at this point? Obviously, it has a huge community on PC, on Xbox, all that kind of stuff. But it's a game that you can, why would you hold off on it? Why wouldn't you just put it out right away?
Yeah, I mean, it all depends on Xbox. I know Hi-Fi Rush, well, that used to be Bethesda anymore, but I don't know. I just feel like it's a lot of games on day one. That's a lot, bro. I think they like to, like, you know, give it some breathing room and release it later. That's what I think. But I can see the game coming out. I'm not saying it's not. I just feel like maybe later on, a little couple months, maybe a month or two later, launch window.
Okay.
I could definitely.
Okay.
Yeah. Give it some breathing room. Here's another game that I could definitely see this coming out. Okay. I know you said Assassin's Creed Shadows.
No, it's not coming out.
I don't think. You say it's not coming out day one. I think it is coming out day one. On day one, like as a launch title, or maybe a month after launch. Maybe I could see that too. And Mirage maybe release like later this year. I could definitely see that. Now there's a rumor. There's a rumor that the Division might also come out. The Division? Is it like the last Division? I don't know.
I could totally see that. Division 2 should totally work on it.
I mean, that would be a pretty good game for the Switch, I think, man. That would be good.
Someone in the chat is asking about Cyberpunk 2077. I was thinking about that. I'm debating on that one. CDPR is freaking wizards. They had The Witcher 3 on the original Switch, so it wouldn't shock me if it makes it out this year. I mean, it's obviously coming out on macOS this year as well. I'm gonna put that one. I'll say 60-40 on that one. Launch window. Maybe not day one, but launch window.
I can see launch window, but don't be surprised if it comes out day one. The game is also coming out this year, actually next month. For the Mac Mini, it's coming out. They're releasing this everywhere. So I could definitely see something where surprise everyone day one, Cyberpunk 2077. I could definitely see that, man.
If it happens, it'll be they outsourced it to a porting studio, because clearly they're pretty busy right now with multiple projects going on. So that's why I was like, maybe But yeah, at least launch window. But to your point, it is coming out on Mac OS. So maybe same studio that's getting it on Mac OS would get it on the Switch too.
You know, the same company that worked on Warhammer, the shooter, the third mm-hmm. person shooter. It's a Saber Interactive, I think it's called. They were the ones that ported The Witcher 3, by the way. It wasn't CD Projekt Red. So I knew
they had outsourced it to a studio.
Yeah. Red Dead Redemption 2, Paris.
Very possible. Highly possible.
Day one, I could definitely see that. This is a good one. I could definitely see this on day one. Final Fantasy VII Remake. I could definitely see that. And here's why. It works on the Steam Deck. Also, if you look at the newest trailer of Final Fantasy VII Rebirth that promotes the PC version, and you see the minimum settings, like the lowest settings, I was like, that could definitely come out on the Switch too. I could definitely see that, yo. I don't see anything that's not, but I think that'll be good. That'll be really, really good. It will sell like crazy because Nintendo fans loves RPG games, man. I could definitely see that. Paris?
Yeah. I totally think that could happen. I guess like the overall point of what we're making here is expect huge amounts of third-party support for Switch 2. I would be shocked if it was any other way. I think looking more internally with Nintendo, so I'm going to give you a Miss Leo.
Wait, hold up. Let me play Miss Leo. We haven't played in a long time on the podcast. Miss Leo predictions. Let's go. All right. Go for it, Paris. I think I have the audio somewhere.
Think. Deep cut. This is a deep cut now.
Woo. Let's go.
At launch, Pilot Wings.
Look, I love the idea. I don't know. Hey, look, if it comes out, Paris, props to you. If it happens.
Hey, but I'm just thinking Nintendo's going to do something. There's going to be something kooky. They're going to do something kooky at launch. I'm telling you. Something ain't nobody thinking, a deep cut, like, whoa, what? Pilot Wings, Switch 2 exclusive.
I think that's a launch window. I think.
You got a poo-poo on my. I know. I have a conspiracy theory. And then you got a poo-poo all over. You can't just go, yeah, man, let's see if that happens. Look, you're going to
I love the launch window. Look, I love Pilot Wings, but. Launch window. Nintendo's not going to release three first party games on day one. They're not going to release Mario Kart because they have never done that. They're not going to do that. You know what? Spread it out.
Now I'm going to go look up. Okay.
Look it up. Paris, I have every single Nintendo system besides the Virtual Boy. Nintendo has never released more than three games on day one. That's never happened. You know, maybe two. During the time of the Nintendo 64, it was Mario 64 and Pilot Wings. Day one. Besides that, I can't think of any other game first party day one more than three. That has never happened. They like to spread it out. Ooh, here's a game that I could definitely see for Nintendo Switch 2. Nintendo Switch also has a history with this franchise. Monster Hunter Wilds. I could definitely see that happening. Launch window, not launch day, launch window.
What? I just looked up the Wii U launch games. Nintendo had four games at launch.
Wii games?
Wii U. They had four games at launch.
Okay, besides port games.
I just said.
Mention
Nintendo had four games at launch.
Okay, first of all, stop screaming at me. Second of all, what are the games?
Oh, I just went from the screen. Hold on. Crap. I just went from the screen.
Hold on. I'm dying to hear this because it's. New Wii U games, not ported games.
They had Sing Party.
The heck is that?
Nintendo Land.
Nintendo Land came with it. What's it that came with it?
I don't remember. Oh my God. They had four games at launch. See, you always got to throw your little stuff in there.
No, go ahead. But Sing Party, what the heck is that?
I don't even remember. New Super Mario Brothers U.
That was, okay. And that didn't came out launch day, did it?
I'm reading what the IGN said. These were the launch day games. This is what it said. It had 32 launch day games. That's what it said.
What's the third one? The fourth one? You said four, so I'm dying to hear the fourth one.
Lego City Undercover.
Man, that's That's not forced party. That's not forced party.
We Fit You, but that was a launch window again.
Launch window, see? You see what I'm saying? Like, now, Sync Party, come on, Paris. Really, bro? You're going to compare that? You're going to compare that to, like, the games that we mentioned? You can't compare that, yo. I'm talking about, like, that level of, like, Mario Kart, you know, Pilot Wings, like, that type of... That makes sense, but Sync Party? Come on, man. Come on. Metaphor. The new Metaphor game. I could definitely see that.
I definitely could see that. I mean, to your point about ports, like stuff like that. Yeah, I would expect Sega, all that. Anything that's been highly successful on other platforms, why would you not put it?
Yeah.
It just makes sense.
Yeah, and that crowd loves it too, man. Now, all the Sega announcements that we got to see at the 2 years ago from Sega, there was like a new Jet Set Radio, Crazy Taxi, Golden Axe, Streets of Rage, the return of all those old franchises. I could definitely see that also on Nintendo Switch 2 future, not launch window, but future, maybe like year 2 or 3. I could definitely see that in there. Now, this is a good one. And I think they will try their best to make it happen. But I don't see it as a launch window. Maybe like year 2. Grand Theft Auto 6. Oof.
If the hardware can support it.
Fair.
I mean, that's what it really just comes down to. We won't know until April. If the Wii U and all the sorcery that NVIDIA will do with DLSS under the hood.
Yeah.
It can, play Grand Theft Auto 6. Let's say at a stable 30 frames. I think you put it on there. Why wouldn't you? That's all that comes down to. And that's even my concern with Cyberpunk. If they can get Cyberpunk playing, and I'm talking, because obviously not with Phantom Liberty, because remember, Phantom Liberty is next gen only. So that means Switch 2 is going to have to be able to support that. If they're able to get that, actually, now that I'm saying it, if Cyberpunk shows up on it, so will Grand Theft Auto 6, in my opinion.
I mean, if they could pull off Witcher 3 on the original Switch, I could see that happening with this. I could definitely see that. You know? Anything else, Paris, before we go to the next topic?
No, I mean, just when it comes to the Switch 2, I'm excited for it. I'm sure you signed up for the LA hands-on. I signed up.
I did. I did. Yeah, I couldn't figure out like which one. I just put like afternoon, like around 11 or 12 around there.
I did not the very first one. I think it was 10 o'clock. I did like 11:15.
Wait, see. That's the one I picked.
I hope I get it and you don't. How about that?
But on day one.
Yeah,
in LA,
on day one. Yeah, day one.
I did the same exact thing. Hey, look. I went to the Nintendo GameCube Cube Club event. In 01. That was like a week after Xbox event. I went to a Wii event in Miami. They took us to the hood to play the original Wii before it came out. And there were like no cameras, nothing. It was like very secretive, man. It was funny. I have a whole story. Actually, I'm going to release the audio in the future. And I also attended a Wii U event also in Miami. So I don't remember. There was not anything like that for the Switch. I can't remember, but this could be my fourth one. I hope I could get access to it, man. We'll see. But
I just thought of two other games that'll be on the Switch too.
Okay, go for it.
Star Wars Outlaws.
I guess I could definitely see that.
Dragon Age.
I could definitely see that. Launch window.
Probably a launch one. And again, if it can play it. I just thought of this because why not? Indiana Jones in a Great Circle. Why wouldn't they?
Why not?
Yeah.
Not
day one, but launch window. Kind of like obviously PlayStation's getting it. Sounds like March, April-ish. Maybe by this holiday, you know, you see Indiana Jones on there too. Why not?
I could 100% see it.
Yeah.
I could see Paris. That I could see more than Fallout 76. Honestly.
I'm tired of you trying to crush my dreams. I'm just let's keep moving.
You crushed my dreams many times throughout the years. I should do a whole, you know, a whole audio of just like all the times you said no.
Throughout the year. Yeah, it's just me. No.
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 By the way, Pass, I know we talked a lot about Nintendo Switch too. And this article was on Video Games Chronicle.com. Sony has canceled two more live services games, including a God of War title. The reason why I mentioned that, because I saw you your tweet, you put a meme, a picture of, I think it's you, somebody fainting when they heard
yeah,
the news.
Yeah, yeah. All I put was live service God of War, and it was Larry David fainting.
Larry Darius, yeah. So, okay. I think that was a good idea for Sony to cancel that, because look, it is hard. It is hard to maintain a live service game. It's not easy, man. Everybody's trying to be like Fortnite or like Destiny, you know. Like it's not easy for a company, man. And the chances of taking the attention away from a gamer that plays all these games 24/7, that's the only thing that they play. Hey, come play our live service game. And then to maintain it and add those content constantly, it is tough. It is very, very tough.
Let me forget just live service in general, sustainable and all that. You walk into a boardroom and you pitch, we want to do God of War live service. I would just tell you no and get out. Like you hear it. You just hear it. Like I said, when I saw the Schreier thing and I just saw that, I go, that's a terrible idea.
It is a terrible
idea. I can't even imagine what the pitch is. That you think that's a good idea. Hey, let's invest hundreds of millions of dollars in 5-6 years of time to make a live service God of War game. And look, God bless, I think it was what Blue Point was making it, right? God bless that team. There's nothing against them, whatever. To me, at the leadership level, how do you green light that? How do you think that's a good idea? I just don't think it's a good idea at all. Like, as an example, I could see a Last of Us factions, right? I can see the vision for that, to do something like that. I can see the vision for Spider-Man multiplayer live service again. I can get it. I can envision me playing it and having a good time. At no point can I envision Kratos live service and I'm playing it and having a good time at all. I just can't.
Again, I hope one of these days I can sit down with Rhee.
Oh my God.
And talk about this, like, yes. and show the stats and the research of about that live service games. Like, you know, I know companies are trying to figure out like, okay, what's going to work, what's not, but yo, it's most of the time it doesn't work, man. You know, it's expensive, man.
Yeah. And I have to throw another one in there. I can see a Horizon multiplayer live service. You hunting down the creatures, all that. I can see that. But, and I just tweeted this the other day. The problem's time, man. Time is the ultimate resource in all of this. You're competing for, I've invested so much time into one live service game to make it worth my time, and you want me to buy all the microtransactions, all that stuff. I mean, think about it. I literally dedicated 10 years of my life to Destiny. I don't think I'll ever do that again because I missed out on so much just playing that one game. As much as I loved it, as great experiences I've had over the years, the friends, lifelong friends I've made at this point because of that game, it's too much. It's too much.
The thing, Paris, I think I was the only one from the crew. Like, yeah, I play here and there, but yeah, there's so many other games. And you're like, I don't got time. I'm like, but you played Destiny 2.
That was all I played. That was all I was playing. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And, you know, like, and I dipped my toe into the Division and stuff like that. But it's hard, man. Again, I said it earlier. Unless you're Fortnite or Warzone or Marvel Rivals, at the peak top, your chances of success is minimal, unfortunately. It just is. I mean, again, Pete's not here, but like, look at Pete. What, Pete don't play nothing but PUBG.
That's all he plays.
That was 10 years ago.
That's all he plays. And I get it. It's also, you know, it's time, like you said, right? But also, you feel comfortable. You have your community and you just want to, you feel comfortable playing those games, man. And
yeah.
You have your friends. And there's nothing wrong with that. But for me, I like to experience things that I can't. If I'm just playing like one game the whole time, I'm going to miss out a lot of things, man.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
That's why I discovered a lot of indie games like that. But go ahead.
Like another successful one, because to bring the story in, we had at the Game Awards, Warframe. Like, we went to the preview event they had for that, show off the new content. But, like, we're literally talking to Reb Ford. And just being straight up, I'm like, I've wanted to get into it, but there's like a huge time investment just to get onboarded into it. And she fully admitted, yes, that is still a thing. They are still trying to figure out an easier way to get people deep into the game quickly versus all the time you have to invest just to level up and understand the world and the mechanics and all these things. And boom, 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 boom. While I'm doing all that, there's probably 20 other things I could have been playing. So yeah, people have to make that decision. I'm going to go all in on this, or I'm going to play these 10, 15 other games I could be playing. And that's the big problem. Again, time is the hugest issue with all this.
Yeah, it's hard. It's really, really hard. Especially for me now, you know, having a kid.
Yes.
It's even harder. I mean, you're fine. Your kids are older, but it's not only that. It's, you know, you got other things going on. Work. You know, other things. It's hard to keep up the older you get. You know,
yeah, very much so.
Yeah. So, hey, I don't blame Pete for playing just one game.
That's fine. And I'm not trying to take anything away from anyone that just loves to play Fortnite or just loves to play Marvel Rivals. God bless you. It's your choice. But the point is, there's no way you're playing. Let's put it this way. There's no way you're playing Destiny, PUBG, Fortnite and Marvel Rivals all at the same time. It's impossible. Oh, and just throw Warframe in there too. There's no way you're playing all those at any one time. And that's the problem. You're only going to commit to one, maybe two live services at a time. But there's 15 other ones that are competing for your time as well. And if you don't play them, or they don't, or even if you do play them, but not enough other people are playing them, those games fail.
Yeah. Now,
clearly, Concord is the extreme example of that, but we've seen so many others over the past, you know, 5-6 years that have just simply failed.
Yeah, this is a great conversation, by the way. This is great. I know that I have an interview that I'm gonna post on the podcast. We're gonna go with that right now because this is a very long episode here, but this interview was recorded last month actually, and it's with the franchise director of Dying Light The Beast. This is coming out sometime this year. It was a great conversation. We recorded this at her hotel room in downtown LA. And I'm very excited to try this game because I'm a huge fan of Dying Light. Love the first one. I love the second one too. So it's going to be really, really cool to see, you know, all the stuff that the game comes, once the game comes out. So I had a great conversation with the franchise director, and I'm going to play here on Gamertag Radio. So we're going to take a short break and we'll be back after this.
This is Gamertag Radio. Voicemail at 786-2737-GTR.
Place to clip it.
Okay.
So you want to, doesn't matter where, make sure they're just pointing up so at least I could get your audio.
That's up, right?
That's it.
And it's hard to imagine that this is a camera, right?
Yeah, to do
things are getting smaller and smaller.
Like, yeah, it's a camera. Yeah, well, I'm also going to be using whatever you send me, either B-roll.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the trailer. Yeah,
cool. All right, so let us know your name and tell us.
Okay, so my name is Tymon Smektała. I am Dying Light franchise director, which means I'm responsible for most of the creative decisions around Dying Light as a game series.
Tell us a little bit more about the new game that you guys are working on for a while now.
So what we are cooking up currently is Dying Light The Beast, a new standalone adventure in Dying Light series. I think it's quite interesting because it connects stories of the first game and the second one, and it brings back the legendary hero of the first game, Kyle Crane. Kyle has been held captive and experimented on for 13 years. At the start of the game, he manages to escape in this new open world region called Castor Woods. And of course, what he thinks about first is the revenge for the guy that has captured him. And the guy that has captured him is named the Baron, and he's a descendant of a family that has been running Castor Woods for generations. They also have, they are owners of big pharma family. So of course, he's into science. He experiments with zombie DNA, human DNA, and that's why Kyle's blood is especially interesting for him.
Yeah, and what are the new things that we're going to get to see when it comes with game mechanics? Are there going to be anything new or similar to the first two games?
So Dying Light the Beast offers the most evolved evolved form of our gameplay formula for Dying Light. So you get the natural movement of parkour, you get the melee weapons based combat, but which also has of course firearms and additional tools of destruction. You get day and night experience and the changes between those two phases of the day that Dying Light series is known for. So we are using all of our experiences from previous games and kind of improve and expand on them in Dying Light the Beast. So that's the foundation for the game. But on top of that, you also get some new mechanics. And I think one of the standouts is beast-like powers of the main character. So Kyle Crane is in, like, throughout the game, he tries to survive. We want the game to be balanced in a survival type of way where it's actually not that easy to fight with zombies and not that easy to gather your resources and kind of care for yourself, but from time to time you get to use those beast-like powers, almost like superpowers, that especially in the context of zombie apocalypse, which allow you to basically rip through zombies, cut them in half, jump high, reach places which might be hard to reach otherwise. So definitely that's one of the standouts. I think another one that's actually quite interesting is the vehicle driving. It's like Dying Light is known for parkour, but we have doubled with vehicles, with cars already in Dying Light the Following. And right now we are also, like, the vehicles make a return. Third person perspective, first person perspective, ability to smash through zombies, but at a cost, because once again, Dying Light the Beast is a survival experience. So you have to care about your vehicle, you have to repair it, you have to make sure that it's not damaged, that you have fuel for it. So, I think that's that. It's Dying Light the Beast. It's everything that you loved about Dying Light, but also a couple of new mechanics.
Yeah, and so if there's vehicles, that means the world is going to be more wider, bigger than the previous games, because sometimes when it's vehicles and the world's small, and probably not going to drive much, you know. So.
Of course, definitely. Also, of course, the use of vehicles kind of connects and let me just rephrase this. Of course, the use of vehicles and the vehicles in game makes sense in the context of the environment. You will have places to drive and you will have places to use those vehicles. But I think it's worth saying that it's actually what we're doing here is kind of different to Dying Light the Following, where there were really lots of open spaces and basically open fields that you could cut through with your buggy. In Dying Light the Beast, you mostly drive like 4x4 pickups. So it's more hilly environment, a little bit more of that kind of trying to make sure that your car is able to go through swamps, through forests, and reach its place. So it has a different taste, but definitely there are lots of spaces in the map for you to drive the vehicles in.
I had a really good time playing the first two games. How when it comes to like nighttime, is it gonna, you know, anything different about, is the enemies gonna be more difficult than the previous ones? Well, you could tell us a little bit about that.
So of course, when it comes to the night experience, what I said previously stands. So we are expanding and kind of honing the experience using all of our experiences and knowledge that we have gathered in previous games. But I think it's safe to say that in Dying Light the Beast, we are pushing the night experience more towards the horror experience. And by horror, I mean building tension, building anticipation, what's behind each corner. And I think it's easiest to illustrate looking at the fact that we have lots of forests and woods in the game. And now if you think of it, actually being in the forest at night is one of the scariest experiences that you can have in life. And Dying Light the Beast allows you to kind of go through that in a safe environment of a video game. But yes, we do a lot with playing with players' emotions and kind of expectations during those night segments in the night where you just have your flashlight, maybe a machete or some other weapon, and you move your flashlight left to right, and there are plenty of shadows everywhere, and you don't know what hides in those shadows. Maybe there's something like some kind of a zombie behind this tree or the other tree. Of course, we also pull some strings behind the scenes to scare you a little bit more, so we kind of make you first feel the anticipation of an interest of trying to see what's there. Then you kind of make you feel that there's, you're safe, there's nothing there, and suddenly, where you don't expect that, we start spawning zombies on you. It's not jump scares, but we kind of have this, those mechanics that make sure that you constantly feel on the edge, kind of surfing the wave of feeling comfortable and getting scared and feeling quite tense about everything that surrounds you in those forests at night.
Yeah, I know you mentioned about forests. So is there going to be less safe areas at night? You know, around like the forest area, that's going to be places to, you know, it's when I like stay away from the craziness. Anyways, yeah, I guess that.
So Dying Light the Beast, of course, is a survival game, horror game with zombies in it. So there aren't that many places that where you can feel safe. Of course, we have safe zones and the safe zone mechanic returns. So there are places which you can kind of prepare as those safe places, places to which you can escape if needed, but I think it's safe to say that there are a lot of areas where you feel the threat, the danger of zombies coming at you, and we really kind of spend a lot of time in terms of balance of spawning rate and some mechanics that govern how the enemies spawn to make you feel constantly pressured and threatened by the zombie presence.
What you can tell us about weapons, because I love customizing weapons, you know, getting ready to attack enemies. So what do you could tell us about that? Is there any new type of weapon we're going to get to see?
So when it comes to weapons, Dying Light, of course, keeps the idea that we mostly focus on melee weapons. So of course, machetes, axes, hammers, all of that stuff, knives, all of the good stuff that our players like and love. But on top of that, we have constantly been upgrading players' arsenal, adding firearms, crossbows, bows, explosives, a lot of cocktails, etc. And the beast continues on that route. We are adding again a bunch of new toys. Right now we are just revealing a small fraction of them. So you'll get an access to a grenade launcher with different types of grenades. I think one of the coolest is the UV grenade, which is especially useful during the night. And another thing that you can get in the game is a flamethrower. And actually that's quite crazy that we didn't have a flamethrower in a zombie game before, because it feels quite classic to be able to burn some zombies with a flamethrower. So yes, it's finally it's here, and it's actually quite exciting to use. So definitely a melee weapons focused game, but with lots of different options for you to solve combat situations and generally challenges that you face in the game. So you will have plenty of things to wreak havoc with and defend yourself against zombies.
Yeah, what are the lessons learned from you and the team, you know, working on this project, you know, compared to the previous one?
When it comes to the Beast, we are trying to use all of the lessons that we have learned from previous games. So it's kind of hard to pinpoint anything specific. Like the team that works on the game has been consistently with us for those 10 years, because maybe it's worth mentioning that Dying Light as a series, as a franchise, will celebrate its 10th anniversary next year in 2025. And we were fortunate enough and lucky enough to keep large portions of the team intact. So I think about 60% of people that work on the Beast are people that have worked on Dying Light 1 and also Dying Light 2. So the experience, the expertise is there. So we are building on top of that. And to be honest, off the top of my head, it's hard to pinpoint anything specific. I think basically every part of the game benefits from that experience and that knowledge. Maybe one thing that it doesn't actually come from the experience, but I think that the Beast as a project made possible is that the open world of Castor Woods, the area where the game takes place, is slightly more compact, but this allowed us to focus and look at every basically square centimeter of the map with detail. So a lot of it is handcrafted and really high fidelity stuff. And this is something that our level artists and environment artists really are kind of proud of and excited about, because they can really make you feel like you are part of this game world by putting a lot of details here and there that definitely add to the immersion.
Yeah, one of the things that I do love about your games. It's like the previous, actually the first game and the second one too, a lot of content after an update. So it was like a lot. It kept me going back and continue playing. Here, was that something that you guys want to continue to do, similar to the older games, where there's gonna be new content, new missions, new stuff after release in the future?
Of course, it is a little too early to talk about post-launch content, but I think we have made our mark on the industry by supporting our games for many, many years, kind of giving them this long tail of interest, and we would like for The Beast to have the same. But as I said, it's too early to talk about specifics. We are just right now focusing on making sure the game is polished, the game is ready for release. At this year's TGA, we are announcing the release window for the game, which is summer 2025. So we still have a few more months to go, and we are very confident and very happy with where we are in the production. Basically, right now in the process of adding even more of those details I mentioned and polishing the overall experience.
Yeah. So let's say a person that find this game, first time playing, they never played the part one or part two. Is that something that is really important before playing this game, to know more about the character, the story, and gaming mechanics, or they can just play this without knowing anything about it?
The Beast was consciously designed as a game that could be also an entry point to the series. And that's why it has the most evolved formula of Dying Light gameplay. Like, you get the double espresso format of that gameplay in Dying Light The Beast. In terms of narrative, yes, it connects the stories of Dying Light 1 and Dying Light 2, but there's one trick, narrative design trick, that we are using that I think will ease of the entry for a lot of new players, and it's the fact that the main character, Kyle Crane, has been held captive for those 13 years. So now he returns to this world, kind of looking at everything with fresh eyes and discovering things anew, in the same way as a new player discovers the world of Castlewood. So it's definitely a standalone adventure that everyone can kind of jump into. And as I said, this is a great entry point to Dying Light series. But of course, I also need to say this, that if you know Dying Light 1 and Dying Light 2, you will find plenty of references and kind of Easter eggs and serious narrative threats that we refer to. But I think it works on all levels. Like, if you just jump in straight, you will get a very satisfying experience just living this adventure and maybe seeing some hints that refer to something that has happened in the past that hopefully will pique your interest about those previous adventures and previous games. If you know Dying Light by heart and you know every in and out and every character, then of course this is also a very good experience, because not only will get to play as Kyle Crane again, and we have spent a lot of time making sure that it really feels like you're playing Kyle Crane, and you will find plenty of cool stuff that just you will realize and notice, and will get feel good about it, because like, this is the series that it feels you love and you're getting back to.
Yeah, I know I haven't seen the trailer yet.
Because
it's coming out.
Yeah.
But can you tell us a little bit about the trailer? And
yep.
That will be my last question. Yeah.
So I think the most important thing for this year's TGA for us, for the trailer for this year's TGA, is we are introducing the antagonist of the game. We started by announcing the game at opening night live at this year's Gamescom. That's kind of the second beat of our narrative, the second part of our narrative, where we present the antagonist of the game, the Baron. So the Baron is the guy that kind of experimented on Kyle a lot, and now Kyle wants to take his revenge. What we are doing there, we're actually not revealing Baron like 100% full nudity style. You don't get to see the whole of him and understand who he is fully. I think it's best experience when you play the game. But we try to present him through some of the actions that he does and some of the objects that he surrounds himself with. In the trailer, you will see that he uses high fidelity audio equipment, that he has like a perfectly tailored suit, that he has expensive jewelry with some symbols that also are actually very important to who he is. You will see that in his office there are paintings, originals from top class European museums that he managed to like that were transported to his office at his demand, because he just can do it. He's so resourceful and so powerful. And so he basically sent his men during zombie apocalypse to, I don't know, Madrid, Prado to get a painting from Francis Goya, and that painting is in his office. And you will see him as a emotionless but very, very smart guy who feels it's basically his responsibility to use reason and intellect, even in the zombie apocalypse, to achieve his goals. What those goals are, of course, I will not reveal, and I hope you will be able to discover that in the game. But you get also a glimpse of the stuff he was doing to Kyle, experimenting with him in a very brutal, very harsh way. So I think it's a nice kind of introduction to the character that you will get to meet in the game. And the trailer caps off with a sequence of gameplay clips as a preparation for a full gameplay rollout that it will happen sometime next year. But it kind of hints at some of the stuff that we have already discussed, like the new environments, the swamps, the tourist town in the center of the map, some of the new weapons. There's a glimpse of the flamethrower, of the grenade launcher, some scenes from the night experience, some scenes from driving. So I think it adds few crumbs here and there to how the game plays, as I said, in preparation for the big rollout that we have prepared for early next year, because the game will be released in summer 2025.
Yeah, I just want to say I'm very excited to learn more about the game, get to see more about it in the future, but I can't wait to play it next year, man. So congratulations to you and the team.
Thank you so much. Thanks.
This is Gamer Tag Radio.
All right, so we'll be back here. Shout out to the team over there, Techland, for giving me the opportunity to do this interview. By the way, every week we have an interview, by the way, the past since the beginning of the year. So it's good, man. So we had Witcher, the new Witcher game. Paris sat down with the team, CD Projekt Red. Amazing interview. I got picked up a month later, I guess, the interview. Then we had also the Final Fantasy VII Rebirth team. Got to interview them. Also Warren Spector about their new game, Thick Ass Thieves. And now this one, Dying Light The Beast. And then later this week, we'll have Phil Spencer, also part of the celebration of the 20th anniversary of GTR, man. So what you think? How are we doing, Paris? I think that's pretty good.
I was just going to comment, man, just 20 years of doing this and you just go down the Rolodex of people that we've had a chance to talk to over the years and have these conversations. It's just crazy, man. And it's crazy in the way of not only have we had a chance to talk to a Phil Smith, it's like repeat visits with some of these people, and it's still happening. Like, again, I still trip out that I was the first person to sit down and talk with CD Projekt Red about The Witcher 4.
That's nuts.
I mean, it was literally right after the Game Awards, just stuff like that. It was so funny. And I'll talk about more of this at a later date, but I was talking to somebody in the industry that just randomly throughout, oh yeah, I was watching your interview with Carrie Patel about Avowed, and I really love the conversation that you're having. Like, oh wait, like, you're shocked. You're like, wait, you saw that? Like, you never know who's paying attention and watching this stuff, but it's just getting those kind of opportunities. Like I said, you just talked to Warren Spector. I mean, one of the greatest gaming minds we've had ever. It's insane. Like, I'm at a point now where, and I'm sure you're probably there too, I have a short list now of people that I still want to talk to, I've not talked to. And really, really, it's probably like one. There's probably one person that I have not spoken to in this industry, either on record or off record, that I still want to sit down and have a conversation with, because I think it would be fascinating. You take a guess who it is?
Is it someone from Nintendo?
Yep.
Miyamoto.
Yeah. Could you imagine? I'd probably be shaking like a leaf the whole time.
He's on my list. Actually, I have three. Miyamoto's is up there too for me. I also want to sit down with Doug Bowser. And the reason why I want to talk to him, because I'm cool with Doug. Like, I'll see him. Hey, what's up? It's complicated. See,
I guess that's my point, though. It's like, yeah, you've actually talked to him already. I'm talking about someone I've never had any kind of conversation with.
Miyamoto for sure. For sure. That's like top of the list. But you know who I would love to sit down? This would be like a full circle moment. And look, you guys can clip this. Like, this is like something that means a lot to me because I really want to sit down and talk to this person. Bill Gates.
Yeah, that'd be a good one.
I've been trying for years, and I spoke to different people that is part of his circle in the past. And it's just never gone through, but I would love to sit down with Bill Gates. And the reason is, you know, I met him back in 2001 when the original Xbox was coming out, and we got to play Fusion Frenzy against each other. Like, here's the thing, had a lot of people, I think the majority of people never heard this story, but back in 2001, when I got invited to attend the launch event, right, I went to Toys R Us in Times Square, rest in peace, and I had my tape recorder with me where I recorded a bunch of content outside of the store, also at the WWF at that time, WWF restaurant that was across the street from Toys R Us. People that I got to meet, you know, we were talking about the launch and all that stuff, right? So I took my recorder with me, and there was a moment where the media started asking questions to Bill Gates, and I was there, and I took out my tape recorder with me and started asking questions too. And yo, it was like a pretty good question that I can't remember exactly what it was, but it was something about getting into like the gaming business or something like that. I can't remember, but I was recording and someone from his PR team came, took my recorder and was like, hey, sorry, you can't do this. I'm like, wait, what? But why? It's like a bunch of people recording. This is like, you know, and that, yo, that was like my moment. I was like, yo, I'm here. I can't believe I'm interviewing him. And yo, they took my recording, bro. They took my recording. And I was like, oh, damn. You know, at that time, I didn't know how, like, I didn't know about talking to PR. Like, I was just still learning. It was like very, I was, you know, young at that time. I didn't know what the hell I was doing, but that would have been a cool moment getting that interview, man. But the tape is gone. So, but I hope one day I can interview him, man. That would be cool to sit down with him. Also sit down with Miyamoto. The reason why I mentioned Doug Bowser is because a lot of people don't know much about Doug. You know, it's they only see the business side of him. And I just want to get to know him, man. It's like talking to Reggie Fils-Aimé, right? And I doubt Doug will answer this question because he's still president of Nintendo. You know, when Reggie was talking to me and talking about, you know, him getting robbed in the Bronx with his brother and stuff like what? Like, yo, the amount of people that hit me up behind the scenes, I'm like, yo, I've never heard Reggie talk about that. I'm like, yo, that's crazy. Because you know what it is, Paris? I think it is important for people to learn about the other side of the, beside the business suit side of the person that we have on the show. You get what I'm saying? Like, it's good to learn about, you know, how they got to that position. You know? So, it was interesting. So, just want to say that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and again, just bring it all back full circle. That's what's just been amazing over these years that we've had these kind of opportunities to talk to these people and get those kind of stories out of them. And, you know, bring it all back. Bonnie Ross, you realize we're all just people. We're all just people at the end of the day, you know? And when you come in with that perspective, that's why we've been able to have some great conversations that we've had.
Mm-hmm. Here's the thing. Believe it or not, when Don Mattrick was the head of Xbox at that time, I did a open letter about the changes that they made. I wasn't thrilled about the Xbox launch, Xbox One launch, and the announcement. It was just, the messaging was terrible at that time at E3. So I posted a open letter about it. And I got so many people from like, they used to work at Xbox and so on, giving me props for writing that letter. And at that time, they made a lot of cuts for, like, they laid off the Game of Score Block team. Like, anything community, it was already gone at that time, right? So I posted that letter. I think a week or two after that, Don Mattrick left. And it wasn't because of the letter. He probably planned it out a long time before that. We get an email months later, an invitation to sit down with Phil. Do you remember that, Paris? Was it 2014?
Yeah, it was 2014.
14. We sat down with Phil, and it was because of that moment of that letter. You know, it went around. It was, people were sharing that everywhere. So it was cool to have Phil, and that's when Paris were like, I don't like the Kinect. But then after that, you're like, they trusted us again. We had them again on the 1000th episode and now the 20th anniversary. It's good to see them, an opportunity coming from Microsoft and everybody else giving us the opportunity to sit down with people and having conversations, man. It's cool. Very, really cool. Anything else, Paris, before we wrap up the podcast?
No, I think that's it.
Yeah, that was a good conversation, man. It was good. Well, everyone, head over to GamerTagRadio.com, post your comments and feedback, listen to our past episodes. Also, if you find us on any podcast app, if you find a clip online, on social, whatever, anything, make sure to go and subscribe, post your comments, you know, share the content. It will help us out. It will mean a lot to us, spreading the word about the show. And that's about it. We just want to wrap it up. And also, guys, give us a call, fan mail. We're available. Grabbing calls, man. So give us a call, 786-273-7GTR. That's 273-7GTR. All right, everyone. Until next time, we're out. Peace.
Thanks for listening to Gamertag Radio. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. You have 5 new messages. Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.